Coffee and Chromosomes is brought to you by the charity Wouldn't Change a Thing, creating a world where negative perceptions of Down syndrome are a thing of the past. If you would like to hear more about a certain topic or even from a particular individual, then please get in touch with us. Email us at podcast@wouldn'tchangeathing.org and we'll do our best to try and make it happen. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Coffee and Chromosomes. Today's guest is an education consultant whose goal is to improve the image and attainment levels in maths for everyone, including those with Down syndrome. Now living in Surrey, though originally from Northern Ireland, our guest is also a busy mum to three young boys. In 2018, her fourth baby was born when she set up the Maths Mum, a venture aiming to help parents understand how the curriculum is taught in schools today, enabling them to then correctly engage with their children's learning. We are so pleased to welcome Karen McGuigan. Karen, you are literally like a lockdown gift to us all. So personally, I would like to thank you and welcome you to our podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me on today.
Karen, you've got a really interesting background. You've studied chemical engineering. You've got an extensive background in consulting, recruitment and program management. That's just to name a few. What made you make the leap from that to setting up the Maths Mum?
So I had this checkered career, still not knowing what I wanted to be when I grew up, is probably how I would describe it. But I've always been a maths geek. Probably through my school days, I hid it quite a lot because it was definitely not fashionable. But when my eldest child started school, I started to realize they were talking about maths in a way that I didn't really understand. They were talking about words that just didn't mean anything to me. And so I decided to study up, and I got the national curriculum and I decided to read it to study, find out what Dexter was doing at school. And then through the next probably couple of years, I started to realize a lot of parents, especially the local moms, were very scared of maths and didn't actually embrace it and said things that kind of quite annoyed me, especially in front of the children, like, I'm rubbish at maths, my son's going to be rubbish at maths too. Yeah. And it really didn't sit well with me because in primary school, the maths is not difficult. The way it's taught today is different to what we know. So I decided to set up the Maths Mum with the aim of basically tackling parents and saying, we've got to do better. We've got to tackle our own anxiety so as we don't pass it on to our children. And in fact, the way maths is taught today, if we were taught that way, we would be much better. In fact, we were given a disservice. So the way that we were taught maths was quite, you know, it was quite one way, and you either got it or you didn't get it. And quite a lot of people didn't get it. And that's why they are, you know, they shy away from it in adulthood. So I think the Maths Mum was born out of my desire because I understood maths, I understood what was happening, and I really, really wanted parents at primary school level to get engaged with their children. Yeah. Give them a chance to learn to love maths, because if all they hear is negative or it's too difficult for mommy and daddy to do, it sets them up for complete failure and acceptance that they'll never be able to do it because mommy and daddy can't do it.
It's interesting you said there about the things that parents say that would get your back up a bit, you know, about, oh, maths is hard and it's complicated and I was never good at maths and my children are never going to be good at maths, because I'm probably guilty of that. I was never very good at maths. Well, I thought I wasn't very good at maths. And now I'm like, what was I on about? But I've got a fear of maths. And immediately when numbers come into it, even at work or whatever, I'm always like, oh, I'm not very good with numbers. I'm not very, you know, and I straight away put myself down off, you know, straight away. And I'm worried that I'm going to do the same to my kids. So then I shut down and I'm like, well, I'm not even going to talk about it, because if I don't talk about it and I don't have to deal with that, then, you know, they won't start believing that. But actually lockdown has forced us to, you know, to not be the supporters on the sideline and checking that they get a concept, but the teachers of that. And so this is where I've had to re-educate myself, and where you have helped us massively with the Maths Mum. So I guess just for people listening out there, it would be good to hear you know, more about, you know, what is the Maths Mum and what does she offer?
So before lockdown, I was running physical courses for parents to come along. So during the school day and evenings, people came and I would cover things like Key Stage 1, Key Stage 2 into lower and upper. So that was years 3 and 4 and then 5 and 6. And I would do physical courses. So people would come to me and we'd sit for a couple of hours and I'd go through all the learning. So the Key Stage 1 was 3 years worth of learning in 2.5 hours with a break in between for some coffee and biscuits. And I actually have to say that our local area is probably much better off for all the parents who did come to it. I got lots of thank yous when lockdown happened and people realizing that they knew what they were doing. So obviously I'd started branching out and I had been going into schools, and actually schools had been using my services to help with some of their parents to try and upskill them. And that was quite interesting. So that's where I was going to, but obviously lockdown happened and I couldn't run a physical course again. So I'd like to say I got in there before Joe Wicks and offered my services for free. But maths isn't quite as sexy, and certainly I'm not as sexy as Joe Wicks in Lycra, but less people, you know, took up my my offer of free maths. But actually that's not true. I set about, the first thing I did was create a video and publicize it saying, unlike English, where we all have books at home, you don't have the maths aids at home that your children are used to using at school. And the first resource booklet I published for free was Make Your Own Maths Aids. And I described all the maths aids and ways in which you could actually, with stuff at home, make them so that you had them, and how you could describe to your child, well, if this is what you use, Deans or Base 10 at school, this is what we can use here. So sticks and dots is what Deans or Base 10 look like. They're little cubes and sticks. So cubes meaning one, sticks meaning 10. And I basically demonstrated how you could do, you know, use what you had at home to basically make the maths aids that children had at school. And then I went on to write a total of 18 workbooks, which basically took you through the entire primary school curriculum by topic. But unlike most workbooks, I did them from reception to year six, which meant if you had multiple children at different years, you were able to actually take a topic and work it right through. This is all the learning. This is how it increases difficulty year on year. And it allowed children who maybe weren't working correctly at the year they were at to drop down a year and work the way up, or understand, how do I build up to actually getting to year three? Let's look at year one and year two. Or indeed for children, which quite a lot of the parents thanked me for, they were able to see and how to work ahead. So it actually encouraged some of them to kind of take the next step and work up a level. And one parent in particular, honestly, I'm sure she had me on quick dial, because every new book I published, workbook I published, she had purchased it within, or downloaded it, because everything was for free at that point. She had downloaded it within 30 seconds of it, you know, popping up on her screen. So those 18, they were all for free. And then towards the end of June, I published the end of year assessments. Now, I know from growing up, we had end of year tests, even in primary school. They don't do them these days. But the biggest issue that I had last year was looking at parents and saying, well, how do I know what they've done and what they haven't done? And it was very clear to me in math, there was quite a lot of subjects that weren't covered before lockdown that I was having to do with my children. Now, obviously, I knew what I was doing, so yeah, that was fine. Made me realize that parents would have a gap in their knowledge of, how do I know what he doesn't know? How do we know what they don't know? Yeah. I know what they do know, but I don't know what they don't know. And this was a way of saying, this is what the government say your child should know by the end of this academic year. Listed. Here is a set of questions by topic that actually go through and test your child. And it wasn't set out to be a sit down and time you test. It was set out so that the questions at the start of that topic were easy. And they got progressively harder until at the end of it, it would be, that child is secure in the level of maths that they were meant to have at the end of this year. And a lot of parents downloaded those as their own way of assessing children. And it really did highlight. So if you started a topic and the child had no knowledge of it, you could guarantee it wasn't taught in the school before they left. Yeah. If they got partway down, they may have, you know, touched upon it, but they really didn't understand it. And then if they did get to the finish, you can go, tick, we've done that. They're happy for this year. And a lot of parents have used those as benchmarks, certainly indeed this year at the start of the year as well, to kind of say, I know they're not up to speed, but I can't communicate with the teacher and tell them what they don't know. So we've used your assessment to actually have that communication. So yeah, no, I wrote quite a lot of things for the home market, for the homeschooling market, but everything I do always was with a parent in mind. So my workbooks, as I described them, but I also got frustrated myself one evening downloading times tables, one page at a time of Twinkle. And I got so fed up on a Sunday evening at 9 o'clock. I threw them on the grind and I decided to write my own times table checker. And that was 55 pages. And I published it for free that night and said, here you go. One PDF, 55 pages, every times table test you will ever need to test your children. And a friend of mine who downloaded it sent me a picture the next day. She downloaded and laminated and she said, thank you, Karen. I've laminated them and I plan to use these for all three of my children as they go through.
You're doing all this. And let's not forget, you have got three children at home, like the rest of us. And it's not just maths. It's all the rest that we're having to teach them. Yeah, I mean, you've got the head start when it comes to maths. You know, so actually, lockdown has been a bit of a catalyst, maybe, you know, for yourself and the maths mum, which is fabulous because it's come along. I mean, it definitely came along at the right time for us. So I guess, you know, as things start to, hopefully, fingers crossed, normalise, and if people listening in the future, hopefully it is all normal, you know.
2028.
Oh, God, don't. What's the future? What directionally for the maths mum? Where do you see that growth?
Well, I think the biggest aspect of what happened towards the end, July, August time, after I'd done all that work for mainstream, I had been putting videos of Lance online and showing. So Lance is obviously my son who turned 8 in lockdown and he's got Down syndrome. And I started putting those videos and what was happening was people were contacting me going, not getting any help, no differentiated work. Can you help me? And I was supporting people on video conferencing as best I could. And eventually a group of parents who had been talking to me about doing a differentiated curriculum basically pressurized me and said, stop doing this for mainstream and help us out. So they know who they are. Yes. They sat on me and said, come on, time to get on with. So I had actually started before lockdown, at the start of September the year before, I'd written a differentiated curriculum for Lance and his best friend Ella, both at our local mainstream school. So I trained the TAs and they were working to a differentiated curriculum that I set up. And the school were happy with what I'd done. We've got a brilliant relationship, me and the school, and they knew with regard to the maths mom what I was doing. So it was at mid-July that basically my business plan again turned and took another shift and the Maths for Life program has been developed. So I, the other side of lockdown, and since obviously the summer, a large area of time and my kind of attention has been in developing a differentiated approach for children with learning difficulties.
So that is Maths for Life, is it? So that's how it's different to the Maths Mum, is that it's the differentiated approach for people with learning difficulties.
Yes. Yeah. So I've had to slightly divorce myself. So the Maths Mum helps parents. Mm-hmm. Maths for Life is an educational program for differentiated maths. And that is providing expertise into not just for parents, but actually for schools, colleges, teaching assistants, teachers, and actually the professionals. So people who interface, so educational psychologists, specialist teachers, advisory teachers who are using the kind of the Maths for Life, the structure to help input into education, health and care plan targets and IEPs. So yes, so the Maths Mum is still there remaining and I will always help parents no matter who those parents are. Yeah. But the Maths for Life is definitely where Karen McGuigan, the educational consultant, puts her hat on. And it's now got its own website and it's very much a kind of a much more professional outlook. And it's got a book, it has got a resource library, and it will soon have a community forum as well, so that we'll be able to communicate all within the membership pages. And that's definitely been, you know, I did not think at the start of lockdown a year ago, this is what I'd be doing, but I'm absolutely glad I am, because it's starting to make a massive difference to children and young adults with learning difficulties. Mm-hmm. And the feedback from children and from parents of children who otherwise were never engaged with maths, who are suddenly doing maths and enjoying it. This week, I have one person start a week ago, and he's successfully done maths quizzes for 20 minutes every day against the backdrop of not wanting to do it. And also, he's older, he's 17. So this is the momentum building up. It's not just about children anymore. It's about the fact that there are young adults who have come through the system and haven't got the maths they need for life. So maths for life is about saying, what does a child through their education need to survive in the world? They've got learning difficulties. Let's look at what's absolutely critical for them to know in the world that we live in. Given everything that they have to work with, so we've got lots of technology, how do we make sure and ensure that they have got the maths that they need for life versus the maths that the curriculum maps out, which is for the qualification of a GCSE? I'd like to point out, I'm not saying that children with learning difficulties can't do a GCSE. I'm saying that a GCSE maths is actually quite a challenge for a typically developing child. Yeah. And therefore, it's fair to say that if you've got a learning difficulty, it's even more of a challenge. But what I'd like to say is, if you follow a program that actually works on the foundations and building on foundations, solid foundations, that it may be attainable, but maybe not at 16, maybe at 18, maybe at 20, maybe at 26. If a child or a young adult still wants to learn, they can, but it's all built on solid foundations.
So there, everything you've said there, I mean, I think it's absolutely amazing and is addressing a fundamental gap that we have, that especially parents with children, young people with additional needs are facing and are battling with every day. And I think from what I find is that you have pockets of inclusive brilliance everywhere, but it's pockets. And how do we get that a kind of whole systemic shift in that inclusion and in saying, okay, so we've got this overarching program and it comes from above and trickles down everywhere so that no one is left behind, no one is forgotten. So you are the answer to us, to our community. But how, you know, what's the roadmap, do you think? You know, the next step to take it up a notch and to let's get that in our infrastructure, in our education system. It's not just the parents that are bashing at the door. It's actually recognised. And we are, as a community, well, people with learning difficulties, etc., are being recognised more and changes are being made. But again, it's the pockets of brilliance that exist. You could have two schools down the road from each other, same county, same funding, same everything. But sometimes, and this is what I found, or we found in our personal situation, is that from one year to the next, it can massively, the outlook for my child can massively change because it's the brilliance at the classroom level or the teacher level or the TA level. How do we embrace this and get this out everywhere? So it's not just luck of the draw.
Well, I sent a copy to Boris and I did get a response.
You did actually.
What did he say?
Well, it wasn't quite him, but the letter did come from 10 Downing Street. And it basically said that Boris did like it and thinks it's a very good idea. So I've obviously got that quoted on my website. I hoped he passed it on to Gavin, but I don't think he did somehow. How can I affect change? Well, here's the thing. I have done all of this, as you so rightly pointed out, while being a full-time mum and teacher to my children. I'm not going to go away. I have ways and means, but I'm slowly and surely infiltrating the communities that have got an influence. So I've engaged now with the parliamentary groups, the SEND parliamentary groups. I've listened into some Westminster Forum groups. I've paid to attend those as well. And I'm starting to gather that kind of evidence of what needs to be done. I've already spoken to people like Ofqual and the Department for Education when I was doing my research, because when I started all this, I wanted to make sure that the path that I was taking was actually okay. Well, you know, were there any obstacles to it? So as far as I can see, they're going to have to tell me to stop somewhere. So I'm going to keep going until somebody tells me I'm not allowed to do it. What that means is everything that I've done and, you know, everything in the maths for life is contained within the curriculum. It's just laid out differently and there's no time skills associated with this. So you attain a level when you've secured the level rather than a year has passed. Okay, so it can take you longer. Now, how am I going to get this across the board? Well, I'm engaged with some organizations who have influence in government. That's one, but it's the community. I think the Down syndrome community is one of the most influential when it comes to making things happen. If we look at the people in it, and whenever I started this project, I armed myself with some very influential people within the focus group before I even went out there to say, is this going to work? Because you guys need to give me the seal of approval before I go and take the next step. And there was a unanimous thumbs up. So I've got the support of the Down syndrome community. And I think with that in mind, we will infiltrate and we will get in through parents and schools. Now, why will it be adapted in schools? I'm not advocating differentiation by taking a child out of the classroom. What I'm actually saying is, please use the differentiated approach for children within the classroom, but you can have differentiation with inclusion. And what I mean by that is a class can be working at one level using equipment. So they could be measuring, recording grams and kilograms of different, you know, using different scales. Your child might not be capable to work at that level, but they can still use the equipment for other things. You might put stuff on the equipment and actually just look at reading numbers. It might not be relative to, you know, weights and measures at that stage. It might be just looking at the numbers and reading them. Or they might work at the level that they're working to and actually decide is something heavy or light. Yeah. My idea behind it is working at the level of the child. Yeah. Now, how and why? Well, if you look at what I've done, I'm giving the TAs and schools all the work. So all the ideas are in the book. And we know when you're working with a child with learning difficulties, you don't need one approach. You need 20 because they will give you, you'll spend 40 minutes laminating something, making it beautiful, sit down and go, right, I am the bee's knees, because every mother stroke father of a child with learning difficulties has got a laminator. So you will have done that and you will have faced the child who looks at it and picks it up and throws it back in your face and goes, no. And you've spent 40 minutes making it. So my understanding is that this is exact same as life with a TA when you're working with our children, whether you'll be a class TA, an individual TA. You need armed with 10, 15 different ways of doing the exact same thing. And you need to be prepared there and then for it. And my book writes down all those ideas per topic so that you should never run out. And the idea is it's not ending there. Hopefully the forum will allow us to share those and we can continue to add to it. Yeah. The resource library then writes all the workbooks. So unlike the Twinkle Works one page, my workbooks have hundreds of pages in them because I'm like that. Mm-hmm. So when you want a topic, it's repetition, but it's repetition. It's easy repetition, but there's consistency, the language is clear, they're big, they're wide, you know, big pages where you can actually have the very clear question in it. And that's what people love. So from a TA's perspective, you get all the ideas and all the resources. All you have to do is put them together. So it's trying to make life a lot easier. And from a teacher's perspective, there's nothing in my book that they shouldn't already know, except for the fact that it really does break things down into that incremental micro step that we're used to, that they're not used to. So a line in the curriculum is numbers to 10. Yeah. You know as well as I do that, you know, that's like put pants on.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm still working on that and he's 8. Indeed, put socks on. We've been working on that since he was 6 months old. It was the first thing we started in physio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He still tell me he can do his own socks. I haven't seen it at home because he refuses to do them for me. But so we know that when we talk about that line numbers to 10, yeah, that I break it down and that numbers to 10 is broken into 15 different sections. And within that, there's different levels within those sections to try and get, you know, to try and get across that that's the level we need to teach to. We need to teach to that micro level because that's what our children need. They need to be implicitly taught every step along the way. Yeah. And as soon as you assume it all goes horribly wrong. Don't assume. So going back to the question that you asked is, how am I going to make, I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I know I'm following the path that says, until somebody tells me I need to stop, I'm going to keep going.
And I'm sure as well, like, with, as you said, the Down syndrome community are such a great community to try to get change to happen.
Yeah.
And through all of the support groups up and down the country, or whatever that might be, I mean, I know everyone will be behind you for whatever help or support you need from everyone.
Yeah, and I think certainly, like, of the last year, all parents, but particularly parents of children that have additional needs, will 100% understand now perhaps some of the challenges and difficulties that teachers and TAs have within schools, especially when they're trying to land particular concepts. So it would just be great to kind of understand from you, like, we felt it over the last sort of 12 months. You know, there's been times when we're trying to explain a particular concept to Kush. And as we're trying to do it, even the most kind of basic, as you say, going to the 1%, kind of the first part of whatever that concept is, we're instantly going to like a bit of a test mindset and saying, okay, what's this? And if he doesn't get it, we like, you know, we're frustrated.
It's right.
Exactly.
It's right. And then, because also we've got Kira and his sister, and they're both in the same year at school.
Yeah.
So she, we've got such a, you know, it's chalk and cheese. She learns one way, he learns a completely other way. We're probably going to find a way that Kira will learn the concept a lot quicker and fly with it, whereas the amount of iterations we have to go through with Kush, and again, it's true, it is, that's for any child,
yeah,
then yes, you've got the added facet of him having additional needs.
Yeah, and so it would be great just to hear from you, like, one, like, what would your advice be to kind of parents listening right now in terms of having some of those frustrations of just, you know, the general sense of why don't you get it? And that's not just for children with additional needs. I think that's for all parents, for all children right now. You can kind of almost hear that scream like right across the country. And then the second piece is, you do so many creative things in terms of trying to land particular concepts. If you could just be great for listeners that perhaps haven't seen you before or heard you before, like, what are those things of what you do? Any great example of what you've done? Yeah.
So, obviously, I do record some of my sessions with Lance. I find, and this is taking the maths away from it slightly, but I find the best way to engage with getting Lance to understand something is find out what's in it for him.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds really weird, but it is absolutely true. We've seen it, all our children, learning difficulty or not, they master a skill if there's something in it for them. So, you know, I got told that Lance couldn't remember more than two packets of information. That was in a Down syndrome kind of talk. And I was like, I'm sure he can if he had a reason to. So I challenged him and I gave him a 6-digit iPad code. We've all been there. It's like, he figures it out. He memorized a 6-digit code. Now, that is 6 digits that he's now memorized, and it took him 6 weeks to do. We've had a couple of locking out of iPads for 15 minutes, but, you know, that also means more incentive to actually remembering how to do it properly, even with his fat fingers. So when he's motivated, when there's something in it for him, they learn. So I'd like to give you this concept in something with regard to, obviously, remembering numbers is one thing, but a mathematical term. If a child doesn't know the difference between big and small, but yet they like ice cream, and if you say to them, would you like an ice cream? And they say yes. Would you like a big or a small ice cream? And they look at you and go, don't know. You model. You give them one example of a big ice cream, one example of a small ice cream. You ask them whether they'd like a big ice cream or a small ice cream. When they say big ice cream, you take it. The next time you don't model it, do you think they'll remember what a big and small ice cream look like?
So true.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So again, it's tapping into what's in it for them, which is why sometimes the best thing you can do when a child's frustrated is walk away from it. And actually think of a way that actually engages with them, which is why when I look at my workbooks, although I absolutely advocate the whole concrete and working and maths in life, maths should always be part of life. It shouldn't necessarily be a sit-down activity to do. When you're riding a bike, you should be looking at numbers. You should be looking at shapes. You should be counting forwards and backwards. march up the street to 8, march back down the street from 8. That should be part and parcel of what you're doing. So it's not an onerous kind of, right, we're going to sit down now and do maths. It's like, nobody wants to do that. Even I don't want to do that. It's like, no. But if you find out what's in it for them and the reason why they need to learn it, it gives them a motivation. And this is interestingly why I never actually realized when I started it, why it was going to have such an impact on the older children with Down syndrome. Because parents have come to me and said, I've bought your book and I'm working through it with my 15, 16 year old young adult. And I'm like, going, oh, that's interesting. And they said, yes, because my son wants to move out of home, but I've told him he's not allowed to until he gets his maths. He's now motivated.
Yeah.
They want a job. And let's talk about, you know, the maths related to, well, you're going to have to do this. You're going to have to do that. So all of the examples I use and all of the maths, it's framed in reality. So I'll explain to you even more about how powerful that can be when you get it. I do a simple more or less. So it's a picture with Lance and his best friend, Ella. So they're cartoons, they're little caricatures. And I put, you know, 3 or 4 on one of them, and then significantly more, maybe 8, 9, 10 with the other. And the question is, who has got more? And the idea is they should be able to see more or less rather than count. If you show a child, you know, a handful of 3 sweets and a handful of 9 sweets, you know, most children figure out quite quickly which one has got more in it if it's something they want. Yeah. Okay, so with this in mind, I did a worksheet with Lance and Ella online on Zoom. And after 2 worksheets where Ella had more than Lance on 2 occasions, and one was balloons and the other was blocks, Lance took umbrage and left because he was annoyed that Ella had more than him twice. And obviously, the maths mom wrote the workbook, so I felt really guilty. Oh. But for me, that was kind of what was great about that was secured that one. We can, because there's an emotion to that. So I've actually created an emotional understanding, and he was upset that Ella had more than him twice. And that to me is about how you tap into this learning. Yeah. You know, if a child gets emotional about it, they understand it. They get it.
And for anyone that's listening, we've already established that actually it's never too late. So you said that actually this is appealing to adults and young people with Down syndrome or learning difficulties. And obviously we're lucky because we're early on in our journey, and so we know where to start. To anyone that is listening that might have an older person out there with Down syndrome or learning difficulties, how will they know where to start? Where's their start point? How can you find that out to where you start building?
Well, that's the interesting thing about it is most have just gone back to the start. And I think that's because when we actually look at the book starts at pre-number skills. Okay. Yeah. So when people say to me, where does it start? You can start it at birth. You know, at the end of the day, you can start it as young as you want. I have even advocated in pregnancy, you should be tapping your bump, you know, and counting up to 10, you know, so math should start. It should be part and parcel of life. But the book starts with pre-number skills. And I think most people will say with a child, and what we're finding is most people go, oh, yeah, my child is secure in same and different. They know same and different. Mm-hmm. And I go, yes. And then I show them 3 different slides of same and different. And I've got the obvious one. And then I've got the slightly less obvious one where maybe you've got dogs, but they're not all the same type of dog. OK, and then you've got into categories. So you may have a selection where you need to understand that all of those are fruit and that one is, it's a bread, you know, or it's a different type of food. They're all food, but there's some that are a different category, or you need to start categorizing. And what's interesting is as you get up, you kind of realize that actually they don't know that level of same and different. So that's a pre-number skill. And I think that's what we rush ahead in the curriculum, in the way that we're taught. We rush ahead and go basic, same and different. Yeah, check, secured, move on and never do that again. Yeah. And so for me, whenever I say to a parent of an older child or a young adult, go back to the beginning and actually make sure they'll be able to do the early ones in the workbook, but make sure they can do all the difficult ones as well. And then start talking about it in real life, looking at sorting out the laundry. So you can actually frame some of those really early maths concepts into everyday life. And that's what the book does. It gives you loads of ideas and it kind of doesn't set it out as always being a younger, you know, kind of looking at babyish, most of the examples will range from things that you can do with a toy box to things that you can do in a house with maybe chores related.
Amazing.
So it's about going through. And then what you find is you're able to tick box of where the gaps are and concentrate. So you kind of go, oh, my child can count to 20, or my young adult can count to 20 and can read the time. Excellent. Can they tell, you know, some of the other things in the book? Can they do this? So I spoke to a parent last week whose son is doing very well in secondary school maths. And she was able to demonstrate, she said, I'm working at him at home and he's working out the angles of a triangle, the angles round a point. And I'm like, wow, with his calculator, he knows the rules and he's getting them. And I said, wow, God, that's amazing. Brilliant. Bring it on. And then we talked about some of the other things with regard to days of the week, months of the year. And she said, interestingly, no, he's not really secured in those.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, and I did say to her, I said, in life,
what are you gonna need?
How many times have you worked out the angles of a triangle versus how many times have you used the days of the week?
Yeah.
And for me, it was like, that to me is not, you know, that's pointing out the obvious, that actually for that child, it is more important to learn the days of the week and the months of the year to live an independent life than it is to work out those. So it's, let's excel in the maths, but let's make sure our foundations. So I keep going back to the foundations. There are not very many. All maths foundations are basically, there's about five or six foundations that you build everything on maths on. And if you get those secured, then you can keep building. And that's what I mean is, if we get our children secure with those foundations, there is no upper limit. Yeah. I have seen the children, I have worked with the children, I've seen them do my workbooks, who will attain GCSE, who will attain levels of functional skills that is previously not being, you know, able to do, because they will have learned maths the correct way. They will have built on solid foundations and they will take their time getting there. And they'll not spend their time doing the things that maybe is not necessary in life. So let's not go into times tables just yet.
I mean, it's inclusion at its finest. And yeah, about and not being scared. There is something in there for everyone.
Yeah, because I think, you know, there's this whole idea, which I think it's really good, of trying to challenge our children to do as much as they possibly can. And not to have any limits, which I think is fantastic. And we should always do that and expect the most from them. And we've certainly tried to hold by those principles. And as a result, I've seen Kush do things that actually we absolutely didn't expect. But to your point, it's doing that with the foundations in play. Like, there is literally no point in excelling so amazingly well in a niche area, which isn't going to be any use, particularly as it relates to independence later on, rather than actually focusing on the foundations that actually will genuinely help you. I think it's such a good point you make.
And unfortunately, maths is just one of those subjects, because you can see how English builds up and, you know, how reading is level upon level and you learn new words and you learn new contexts and it's all about language and it's all around us. Whereas, you know, maths is very different. And I think a lot more parents are seeing and questioning in mainstream, why are we doing all this? Yeah. And, you know, if I got my hands on the curriculum, I would do things differently as well. How they do the curriculum is the GCSE is the curriculum, and what they do is they divvy up and divide it up year on year below it to the lowest level. You know, so why are you doing fractions in year one? Why do you introduce fractions as a half and a quarter in year one and then do a couple more in year two and then a couple more in year three and then the main bulk of them in year four? It's like, why can't we just leave them to year four?
Yeah.
Because actually, once you get them, the concept is so easy. But why do we do them in dribs and drabs? And the other thing that I should point out, the one thing that's different about the Maths for Life approach to and how it's interfacing into school, most of the schools use schemes of work that do a kind of like, right, we're going to do 3 weeks of number, then we'll leave it for a term. Oh, we'll do 2 weeks of measure, then we'll leave it and we'll come back to it in summer term. And then we'll do, you know, a couple of weeks looking at, you know, something else we'll be doing, and then we'll leave it. And it's this kind of idea for our children of leaving it and coming back in a term. It's like, yeah, you're starting again from scratch.
Yeah, you need to keep going and hammering and hammering and hammering. And it just doesn't, we've seen actually in this, it's like, right, so this week we can do money. next week we're doing time. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
You just got the coins now. I need to keep going with this.
So the idea behind it is, yes, the rest of the class will follow that curriculum, but every day you should still be doing 5 or 6 of the tasks that are the repetition and the bit, you know, every day you should do the numbers, the counting, every day you should be doing the adding and subtracting. So I do that's why the workbooks are so valuable for schools. You know, they can print off and have a stock, and that's what Lance's TA does. She's got a stock of hundreds of my worksheets, and she picks out, and she knows that she has got, so we've got a topic work that we might be working on money, that's a topic this week, but every day he still does all of the other aspects that are the foundations. He will do a little bit every day. So it means that you have that consistency, and then you've got the extra bits on top. Yeah. And it builds up his confidence. So here's the other aspect that I think I find we're about to tackle is independence. So you talked to it, you said about independence.
Yeah.
So our TAs are brilliant. But I find out quite a lot of the time when I'm looking at how good a child is doing is when you ask them how much they're doing of it themselves,
yeah.
Find that it's all being assisted. So therefore, what we have is we've got a lovely TA involved. We've been doing really well. Parents think child is amazing. End of primary school, transition to secondary school, and then it goes all horribly wrong. And largely it's because they've not been doing as much as the secondary school thought independently. It's all been assisted work. So I'm doing some analysis. So I've just invented the Maths for Like Life Hierarchy of Independence. It's a lovely chart. It basically looks at actually getting people when they're doing a question to assess, because I'm doing some baseline tests, and to actually challenge themselves to think, have I prompted, indirectly prompted or directly prompted, or have I modelled this? How much of it has the child done and how much of it have I done? And it's trying to say that development is not just about attaining skills. It's about doing the same skill more independently. Mm-hmm. And that is the biggest thing I've seen since I've been working this with Lance that's happening. He can now read some of the workbooks and do them himself, which 6 months ago he wasn't.
That's brilliant, because I think even with typical children, so much of it is about actually reading, understanding the question, are figuring out, right, well, what particular sum am I supposed to use to solve this particular problem, yeah. And then applying it. And actually, when you start to pull back from that and take it right down to a basic level, lots of the time when we're trying to teach Kush particular concepts, it's exactly as you say, like we could ask him in a particular way, and it could literally be down to the type of tone that we use as to whether then he'll get it right or not.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's actually, well, you know, is that genuinely helping him, or actually do we need to kind of put him into like a neutral scenario for him to then actually like genuinely understand it and kind of get it?
Which goes back to that idea of sometimes it's easier for them to do the independent questions, the easy questions independently, than it is to do the hard questions as help.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you know, I have to look at what the Maths for Life, the premise behind it is. It's that I want to arm Lance with the ability to live and work independently. I'm not kicking him out of the house in any way, shape or form. That's not my intention. I quite fancy him being here a long time to keep me, you know, in the style I've become accustomed to. But it's things like, you know, I have this big fear of him having to carry his man bag full of Numicon down to the coffee shop to work out how much 2 coffees are for him and Ella. You know, that's not going to happen. He's not taking Numicon down to the coffee shop. And, you know, one of my goals is to arm him with enough independence to know when my birthday is, to budget to get me a present and actually deliver it on time in full. You know, that's the kind of, you know, life maths I'm talking about. But that independence means he has to learn how to do it on his own. And even if that is the basics, even if he never goes past 20, if you think about it, how many times in your day do you use numbers over 20? Okay, there might be recipes, but I talked about this with a mother last week, and I said, you can always change the recipes. Instead of 200 grams, you could use it as cups.
Yeah.
You write the recipe as 6 cups instead of 200. So you make it, you can differentiate it for somebody who hasn't got.
Also, I probably shouldn't admit here into how much tools I use right now to avoid using actual math skills. because the reality is there is so much available to you, right? Like just literally in your pocket, on your phone, lots of things readily available for you, right? Or yeah, exactly.
Sorry, what day is it tomorrow?
There you go. Right, exactly.
Yeah, Alexa, what's 10 plus 6?
Yeah. Okay, no, you got that.
Well, so you will then notice, if you watch the videos, I do all of the maths that Lance does. You know, when it's adding and subtracting, it's framed in reality. So the question is framed in reality. He has to work out what the number sum is. He works out the answer. And the last thing we do is check it with a calculator. You know, it's there and then. It's why wouldn't I give him the calculator skills? Because at the end of the day, if he understands the question, how to create the number sum, how to work it out, and then check it using a calculator, when the numbers become too big for him to work out because there isn't just enough numicon to fit in the table or he's out and about elsewhere, he will then know what he's done, how to frame the number sum, and then how to put it into the calculator. So all we're doing is taking out the step where he's actually working out the answer himself. He will use the same methodology.
Which is what we all do anyway. Yeah. I mean, which adult's going to sit there and work out blah, blah, blah? You know, as long as you know which... what math sentence you need or what you're doing, and you've got the concept, put it into account. We all do that.
So, and that's the thing. I think lots of parents worry about calculators and how early you should start to introduce them. So I think you've kind of cleared that one up. So
as long as they're not using it to work out the answer before they understand it. So I always, it's the last step and it's checking your answer. There is a sense of, I agree with you. The world has got technology. It's also the reason why when parents ask me about working out the change, when they say, I'm really stuck with my son just or a daughter can't get the working out the change that you get from a shop. Then I pose the question. It's like, when was the last time you used cash?
Yeah.
When was the last time you worked out change? And they look at me like, well, why are you asking me? It's like, it doesn't happen in real life. So why would you spend an inordinate amount of time teaching this skill to a child when indeed they're going to go beep? What you need to do is teach them the value of money so they know how much they have, how much they're spending, not how much change I'm getting, because you're not getting any change, but to know that two cups of coffee in the coffee shop, I know I've got enough in my bank account to cover that because I've been able to budget. And I know that two coffees is about £8, or maybe in 10 years time, that might be significantly more. Or we might not still be going to coffee shops.
No. Coffee will always stay.
But that's it. You know, I think lockdown and COVID has accelerated the fact that I think in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to get rid of our coins. We're just not using it anymore. Everyone is taking, you know, cashless payments now. You can, I'm sure you can buy your your magazine on the street. You can, I know you can donate to charity. I've heard one of the guys in my door saying you can just tap here and donate.
but as you say, there are plenty of coffee shops who are just doing cashless payments now, and it's certainly heading that way. So absolutely, to your point, I totally agree. Like learning the value of money, understanding how much something costs, being able to actually budget to that appropriately is the key thing. Like get to that first, because I think by the time children, particularly younger children, grow up, those skills will be redundant in terms of understanding how much change comes back, etc.
Yeah, and I think that message is really important as well, Karen. So I think it's important that we touch on it again, that for those listening that do have older children or young adults with learning difficulties, you know, just saying to them that it's not too late. It's never too late.
Yeah.
It's not too late, because, in fact, I've seen now a number of older children come back and re-engage with something that their parents were just absolutely had written off. One in particular who was part of my focus group, her son didn't do the actual questions I'd sent up. He took one look at them and she said he's not into maths. He's a big reader. He reads newspapers, but he wasn't into maths. And then a couple of months afterwards, he happened to find them. I think she was clearing stuff out and she left them on the worktop on a Sunday afternoon and she sent me a video. Her son just picked them up and started working through them. It's about understanding how you relate maths to the real life that we all live in. And it's not too late for those children, because the workbooks that I write, all the caricatures that I have as well, that when you look at the caricatures that I draw them all myself, but all of them, they could be 6, they could be 16, they could be 26. There's no age to that character. So whenever I put them in my book, I'm really aware of the fact that that audience could be a range of ages, to try and keep it as age neutral and relevant as possible, no matter what the child is, no matter how old. If there's a motivation, if there's a reason why they want to do it, it's never, ever too early.
You've been so amazing. You've been an absolute pleasure to talk to. I know we've had quite a few in-depth conversations in the past, and you're just brilliant. So just remind everyone, where can they find you and all of your amazing resources?
So the Maths Mum is all about parents. So if you've got any questions and you need help, the Maths Mum, so the website is themathsmum.co.uk. You can find everything there, from workbooks to advice to videos. And then the Maths for Life program has now got its own website, which is newly written by me. And it is mathsforlife.com, because we're going global.
Yeah. Amazing. So just to end, nearly out of time, we've got three sentences that we would like you to complete for us. So number one, for a new parent starting their journey with a child with additional needs, please remember.
They're just a child. They need exactly the same thing as everyone else. They need to be loved. They need to be center of attention, and they need to be fed and watered and later on walked.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
And then the next one, the best part of being Lance's mum is?
When he crawls into my bed at night and I'm really cold and he cuddles up next to me and he has my own human hot water bottle.
That's fantastic.
And lastly, making a big presumption that you're going to come back on the show with us, because we'd love to have you back in the future. When I next come back on the podcast, I will have
just had a meeting with the new Prime Minister.
Yes.
Her and I were in agreement.
Yes.
That the Maths for Life should be rolled out across the whole of the UK as a priority in their new government.
That is amazing.
Oh, I love it. That is just brilliant. Karen, you have been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Take care.
Beautiful girl with a beautiful smile in a beautiful heart.
Coffee and Chromosomes is brought to you by the charity Wouldn't Change a Thing, creating a world where negative perceptions of Down syndrome are a thing of the past. If you'd like to hear about a particular topic or from a certain individual, email us at podcast@wouldn'tchangeathing.org.